Hey, yo, we about to tear it up. Hey, yo.
Break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the Potty Mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the Actual Factual.
Yes.
Word.
We are back again. Wasn't that Mace? Welcome back.
Yeah.
Back again.
There's a few rap songs called Welcome Back, actually.
Okay, go on. Go on, Actual Factual. Hit
no,
me.
I mean, there's a few. I don't need to go down a list, you know what I mean? There's a few, okay. You know.
I'm sorry.
Back Again, Reflection Eternal, you know. There's a few. Back Again, Dilated Peoples. Come on, man.
Yes, Back Again, the Dilated one.
That was hard.
Yeah, that was hard.
That was hard.
Yes, we are back with another episode. I am excited, as always. I just have to say, with the run that we're having since Andrew Barber on... Well, actually, the Doom episode, then to Andrew Barber, and since January 1st, I'm really appreciative of the range of people we've spoken to. And it just makes me so happy that we are speaking to so many different types of people and gaining so many different types of perspective from said people. I don't care about anything else. That means more to me than anything.
I think we've stumbled upon a concept.
Okay.
The ecosystem of hip-hop. It's a word we're both using often. And I think the ecosystem of hip-hop includes MCs, DJs, graph writers, the journalists, the graphic designers.
Editors.
The people who were carrying the crates, the listeners, the lovers. It's like, I like that term, the ecosystem of hip-hop. I think it's rich and it's empowering.
It's true. It's Kurt Angle. It's true.
It's Come true. On, man. Yo, you see Kurt Angle, yeah? He was a bad man, you know?
I know.
Bro, man used to drink milk, you know, and just bowl out to the ring, brother, just dash a man across the ring, you know? I saw Kurt Angle. I'm going to go off on a tangent, but I saw Kurt Angle wrestle live twice.
I seen him.
Oh, you seen him? Oh, yeah, you went Insurrection.
And I swore at Triple H. Gave him a bit of...
I swore at Scott Steiner. I felt the fear of God in my chest. I told him he needed to go and get a bus pass.
It was so stupid. I was a dumb kid, right? So I am still a dumb kid. But we will get to Donna Chesman. I promise you.
Yeah. We're talking, innit? Grown folks are talking, innit?
So we're at Earl's Court, because this is where it was, Insurrection, I think 2000, 2001. The bus comes in, and the coach has seats where, you know, you're facing the front of the coach and the back of the coach. As it turns in, I'm just standing there looking at the coach up, and it turns out it's Triple H with his glasses, and he just looks and waves, and I just went middle finger.
Now you're rude, bruv. You're rude, bruv. Triple H will punch you up, bruv.
Kurt Angle wasn't on the coach, but the next car he came in, and his neck was the size of my head. His neck was so big, Kurt Angle. It was the size of my neck. Oh, my head. Sorry.
I remember one time I was watching wrestling with my mum. And Batista came out, innit? So, bro, you know my mum's Jamaican mum, innit? So she just saw the size of Batista. She said, what a man big. You can't imagine for him shirt neck. Bro, you know Batista's about to go in hell in the cell, innit? Like, he's not about to buy a shirt, innit? You need to relax. Just relax.
I just love the fact that that's where your mum went to, the shirt.
Bro, we need to do like a YouTube series. Watching old wrestling matches, Jamaican accent, and
we can
Indian
do that.
Accent,
we can
whatever
do
that. Maybe I know that's not politically correct, but
listen,
it'll be
listen,
hilarious.
We should absolutely do that because I have the facility to do that because I did the charity event. So I started a facility where we can watch.
Did you buy a subscription?
Yeah.
No crack software. Yeah. I know you don't pay for stuff. No, so I'm asking. Did you pay for a subscription for this software?
So, what happened? is the platform I was using messed up because the 24-hour podcast I did, I won't get the full 24 hours of video back. And they didn't tell me that I had to break it up. Well, YouTube don't process 24-hour videos all in one go. They process it in increments of 7 hours. So that's why if you see it in my YouTube channel, say 24 hours and 5 minutes... That's how long I did, so I actually did it. But it won't process it because they process it in 7 hours. And I got so vexed that, that they gave me a subscription for a year for free. And I was like, I don't even care. But it's there now. So we can always use it.
So you didn't pay for it, basically. You made a complaint.
I wrote a stringent... I wrote a stern email.
What, like points of view back in the day?
I went...
Did you talk about the emotional distress?
I said, this is a charity event. I did this for my kid. I wanted my kid to see this.
No, yeah, yeah. All fun and joke aside.
So I I've got to do another one. Which I'm going to do, but that's a different story. Anyway,
all right.
tangent aside, we're back with another episode. We're back with a prolific, superb writer in Donna Chessman. Now, she was mentioned in an early episode with DJ Z. Howdy, Z. Howdy. Howdy!
In all caps. In all capitals.
But
with the URL as the subject line. I'm sorry.
And
I'm
sorry. No, it's fine. It's fine. We love Z and we loved, but I was just really psyched that we could get Donna because I just think where she is going and where her career trajectory will go, she'll absolutely be a legend. It's a bit like Karl Lamar. When we spoke to Karl Lamar, and I just thought this guy's. He's different. He is different quality. And when you hear this interview and you hear Donna speak, you'll understand why I say that. Because she does it because she cares. And there's something to be said for that. Because I've talked a lot about colonizers and people who are trying to corner the market. You've got people like Donna, you've got people like Carl, you've got people like Z, you've got people like Rob, people like yourself, Chris, who want to...
Stop it, man. You don't like me, man.
But I've got to say.
You hate me.
But...
It's because it's Black History Month in America, isn't it? I get it.
You went there. But we've got all of these people who give a crap about the culture and where it goes and how to profile and the art of writing and the art of interviewing. And these are people that we should cherish. And these are people that we should hold up. And these are people that we should support. That's why I love Donna Chessman. That's why I love this interview. So that's all I've got to say about that. If you would like to add anything, please do before we get into the episode.
No, I'm good, man. I got a couple of questions for you, but we'll talk about it after the interview.
That's fine. So this is Donna Chessman, Breaking Atoms podcast. Check it out. It's another special episode of the Breaking Atoms podcast. Today, we are speaking to someone we're super psyched and excited to talk to. Now, we in this platform always rave about lyrical MCs, the lyrical miracles, people that we love getting really nitty-gritty into rhymes. But this is like different because now we're speaking to people who are lethal with the pen, who are lyrical miracle with the pen, and someone that we thoroughly respect, enjoy their writing. And we're talking to none other than Donna Chessman on the Breaking Atoms podcast. Donna, how are you doing?
Well, after such an intro, can't be bad. Definitely smiling, though my camera's off, so you can't tell. But big smile on my face. So happy to be here and really like appreciate the intro. Appreciate the fascination with the writing.
No, we absolutely. I think I was a blogger in the blog era. So I'm a blog OG. I'm an OG from the blog era. Let's get it right.
I'm just a film journalist.
I've always had a fascination. Well, go ahead. Yes, that's right. He is a failed journalist. He's a failure in many other respects, Donna, but we won't get into that now. So am I, actually. We're both a bunch of failures, me and Chris. I'm just going to be honest with you. But we are, like I said in the intro, we are very fascinated with people and how they find their voice. And we spoke to Z. Z is someone I've known for many, many years. And we spoke to him back in the last year. And we shouted you out. And we obviously were aware of you, but for us, it's very important that we highlight the people that can profile other artists, but write in such a way in which you're engrossed. It's vivid, much like our favorite rappers. When we talk about Nas and the vivid nature in which they spit their rhymes, it's the same thing. And so this is very important for us. And the platform we have is about that. It's about highlighting people who are contributing to the culture. And to be more succinct about it, we talk about future legends and legends. And I think that you are well on your way to being a legend in the writing game. So we salute you. But we will start your entry into journalism. Talk us back to that point. Take us back to that point. Where was your entry point into journalism?
So I was writing for free and I was doing a very bad job of writing for a couple of hip hop blogs that no one knows about. And I think the real entry point for me, and I love the story, is Tyler, the Creator's Flower Boy Leaks. And I had a dream that I wrote a piece for DJ Booth about his coming out story, mirroring my coming out story. So I woke up from my dream, rolled over, wrote Z, who you had mentioned, the messiest email, just really no business emailing in the way I did. But I'm like delirious and excited and green, and I don't really know what I'm doing, but I had this dream, so I got to go after it. And after that, I roll over, I fall back asleep, email sent, you know, it's in God's hands. And I wake up again, and Z emails me back something to the tune of like, we would be honored, proud to publish this. So that was really the entry point. I say this all the time internally at AudioMac, but like, I am so eternally grateful to Z for taking a chance on literally a nobody. And my email etiquette, horrible. And we all know on Twitter, he likes to shout out how to email properly. I broke all those rules. I never emailed him howdy. That's a weird one. I remember that tweet. But I might as well have emailed him howdy. You know what I mean?
You know, sometimes I often have in my drafts just to email Z with howdy, nothing else, just howdy, just to annoy him. But I don't do it. I can't do it.
I think one day I might do it. Just, I know he's having like an easier day, and I'll just send him a blank howdy just to see what happens.
Do you know what I will do? We should do this in unison. You write howdy, I'll put a URL in the subject line. It will completely freak him out.
Don't attach a song or any links to the music.
Yes.
Like, we should just collaborate on the worst email to send to Z.
Yeah, I think that we should actually hijack the podcast, and instead of having a conversation, let's just list ways we can bother Z.
I like that. I do. I like that.
Yeah, and that's the first Tyler album I actually bought, and I really enjoyed it. So, you know, shout out to Tyler, Creator, Flower Boy, and for you having the insight to write delirious emails. Sometimes they pay off, I guess.
Yeah, I think that they do, and that experience has taught me to meet writers where they're at now as an editor. When I get what, you know, is a sloppy email, you know, sloppy in quotes, I will still read it through, and I'll read your clips, and sometimes I'll even get on the phone with you, and it might not lead to a piece, but I just know the importance of extending grace to someone. So I like to move like that, if possible, when possible.
That's very humble of you. And sticking to the, you know, the topic of meeting writers and relationships, describe some of the key ingredients that go into having a healthy working relationship with an editor and writer. What are some of the things that you should consider as an editor and as a writer? And what are some of your experiences?
I definitely think it's all about communication. I'm not a stickler for deadlines. I'm not crazy about word counts. Like, all those things we can work out. But what you really need to do is over-communicate with someone. So if you're starting out as a writer and you pitched a piece on an interview for, you know, Andy from the Block, and Andy's team is taking the longest time ever to get back to you and you're going to miss your deadline, just tell the editor, just be honest, just say, hey, I really want to do this, but my source just isn't working with me. And a lot of times the editor will be more than understanding, because we're just people. I think something that everyone forgets is that editors are people, writers are people, artists are people, podcasters are people, like, readers are people. And we're not like these monolithic boxes that just exist and then you go from one to the next to get on your way through your career. So I think just over communicate. That's the key ingredient. Just talk. And that goes for everything in life. If you can just over communicate with friends, partners, it might feel annoying because you're saying things that they probably understand. But what you're also doing is respecting them, and you're giving them that part of yourself, and you're being vulnerable in a really necessary way. I'm going on a little bit of a tangent now.
No, it's good.
I'm such a believer in just talking things through, which is why I call writers. Because if we're like three emails deep on a pitch, I'm like, just call me. I'm sure if we just speak to each other like people instead of this weird power dynamic in the email, we'll figure it out.
No, and thank you for saying that, because my wife would definitely say I over-communicate. I talk way too much and I'm way too vulnerable with her. And I'm a big advocate, like, you know, I think sometimes just getting on the phone can sometimes clear the air and, you know, just communicate, like you say. I'm a big believer of that. But with technology and whatnot, I think sometimes now, you know, we want to email and we want to text because it's convenient, but there's still a lot of power in the spoken word.
Yeah, absolutely.
Transitioning from a writer to an editor, what would you say are the kind of key characteristics or traits of a good editor, and how did you find that transition from being in a writer then to an editor?
That's a great question. Well, I still write a ton, thankfully. I don't think I would be able to like function as a human being if I wasn't writing. I think that there would be like some kind of short-circuiting situation. But traits of a good editor. Well, I'm thinking of the good editors that I've had, and it's really just about being sharp. I have an editor now who can highlight a single word and write a just 3-paragraph dissertation on why I need to change that word. But at the same time, he can highlight a full passage and just go, great, this is awesome. And I think it's about that balance of being ruthless, but graceful. So if something's working, tell the writer it's working. I think that a lot of times it's really easy to jump in and be like, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Okay, fix it. But we're people, like I said, so it's also good to be like, this is working, maybe do a little bit more of this. And it really does help to point out what is working, what the writer should be emulating more of, instead of just highlighting like 10 mistakes.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Great answer. So what do you look for in a writer?
Voice. I know that's really broad, but like I want it to sound like a person wrote it and not a content machine, which I am quoting my newsletter right now. But anyway, it's true. When I read great writing and I have like bookshelves all over my house, I read all day long. I read submissions all day long. When I can feel the humanity in it, that's when I'm like, oh my goodness, this is great. Like the technical stuff is learned, but you can't learn how to put like yourself on the page. And even more so if it's an interview, you can't really, I think, be taught how to communicate the humanity of your subject. I think you just have to try over and over again through this arduous process. And then eventually it just clicks and there's a warmth to it. And maybe that's not true. You know, I didn't go to journalism school. I did get an English degree, so I did technically learn how to write. But maybe there is a great way to learn how to interview someone, but no one taught me how to interview someone. I just kind of started doing it, again, through the grace of people like Jeff Weiss and Z.
So when you get a piece of work or, you know, a piece of writing, what are some of the red flags that stand out to you that kind of make you think, oh, this is a content machine at work? What are some of the telltale signs?
Really, what's so tough about it is if there is an interview and the lead, like the opening, is just not connected to the headline, that's really hard for me, because your headline is like your hero. That's what you're selling, essentially. And that language is kind of gross, because I don't want writing to be like transactional, but we are presenting a product to a consumer. But all that said, when your headline doesn't match your intro, that's really tough for me. That usually requires a rewrite. When you're using a lot of like buzzwords to describe the music, but you're not actually telling me what it sounds like, that's really tough as well. It's just, I need to hear your gut. You know, you just have to kind of like, and I think overwriting is better than underwriting. They're both like not great. But it's so much easier to like call back and again point out like this tone is working, but you're going overboard, let's trim, than it is to be like, there's nothing here and I need you to add. So that definitely. And then other red flags, sometimes I get pieces handed in where the interviewee just truly does not want to be there, but the writer wants to make it a piece anyway. And it just is this weird mix of like enthusiasm and dryness. And it's so hard to salvage. Like if your subject just sucks, it's hard to say because I'm not there. Sometimes it's a little your fault. Sometimes it's their fault. It's, you know, shared blame. I don't really like to blame people for things if I can help it, because like, who am I to blame anyone for anything? But I guess those are the red flags, I would say.
you touched upon it already about voice and humanity. How do you kind of, I guess, refine it? Is it through good editing? Is it Practice Makes Perfect? Is it just a constant, like rappers or producers constantly creating music or writing music? Is it the same thing to kind of develop that? I've always been interested in a writer's voice. It's the same reason why I used to read magazines back in the day, hip-hop magazines back in the day. We'd read them for the personalities. How did you develop yours, and how have you refined it, and how have you helped your writers to?
Yeah, for sure. So it feels like a two-part question. So I'll go to your first part first, which is like, how do you develop voice in general? And I think it's a great mix of awesome editors who see you, not an editor that's like, you missed a comma, but an editor that's like, I know what you're trying to do. I see you, I see your potential. I'm going to make it special for you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to push you, and you're not going to always like me, but you're going to be thankful in the end once we get there. So you need that kind of editor. And that's so rare. That's so rare to find. I hope I can be that for at least one writer. I don't know if I've achieved that. Some days I'm so tired that all I do is the grammar and I'm like, okay, great. And some days I'm really in there, like developmentally working on the piece and like trying to push the writer. But it really does come down to being seen by your editor. And then it's also reading. Read everything. Like, I feel like a broken record when I say this and I send it in my newsletter, but just read. Read so much. And it's not just because I like books. It's because reading is fundamental to understanding other people. It's fundamental to understanding yourself. It's fundamental to understanding what works and what doesn't work with language. Like, even if you pick up a book and you hate it, that's a learning experience because you've deduced, like, this style is not for me. I'm going to go nowhere near it. And then on top of that, you realize, wait, this was published and I hated it. That means that I have a chance too, because if something that I hate can be published, then this thing that I'm crazy passionate about, it'll find a home on a blog. It'll find a home somewhere. And I think that little pep talk is important too, but that's an aside. And then the third thing is just practice. Oh my God, you just have to get through it. And writing sucks sometimes. Writing is sometimes the worst thing in the world, but it's also what fuels me as like a human being. Like I said earlier, if I didn't write, I think there'd be like a serious issue going on, like mentally for me. So definitely those three things. And then for myself, I think I'm still finding my voice every day. I look back at things I wrote 2-3 years ago and I'm like, oh no, why was this published? Who allowed this to happen? And I think that's awesome because 3 years from this point, I'm going to have that same reaction, hopefully. And that just means I'm growing every
yeah.
day.
Yeah. I love what you say about the whole reading thing and reading as much as possible, because I had an epiphany a couple of years ago. As an MC, I thought I want to become a better writer, because if I become a better writer, then I'll become a better songwriter and a better lyricist. And I've got to read more in order to become a better writer. So I'm nowhere near as avid a reader as you are and maybe some other people, but I do recognize the importance of writing and reading and how they work in conjunction with each other. So that was a good tidbit. So I definitely need to read a lot more and get this library cracking in my house.
If you need book recommendations, I am here.
No, I'll definitely reach out for some good book recommendations. Apart from reading though, what motivates you to stay writing? What gets you up in the morning? What gets the creative juices flowing? What is it for you?
Wow, that is a hard question. I think writing is so entwined with my existence at this point that I don't even think about what makes me write. I wake up every day at 6 and the first thing I do every day after making coffee is write, whether that's an email or that's for a project that I'm working on, that's for Audio Mac World work, or in my journal, which you can't see, but I have a stack of journals. I've been journaling once a day for 3 years. Shout out journaling. Everyone should do that.
I've started doing it.
Very good. Don't stop. Once you like unlock what you need to write down in your journal every day, your life just becomes so much better. And I don't even know how to explain it, but it's such a revelatory thing every morning just to spend that time with myself. But to get us back on track, oh my goodness, what is it that makes me write? I think originally I started writing because I had no friends. I was very young. I was in like, I don't know, I've been writing forever. I was in first grade and like I didn't get invited to play dates or anything because I was like pretty weird as a kid and no one really wanted to like hang out with me. So I would write stories and those characters would become my friends because I needed to spend time with someone. So I would just write them up, you know, like I want a friend. Okay, well, they were tall and they had red hair and oh, but now I can make them do whatever I want. So like then they have this friend and then they like go hang out and they have like a chill spot and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm in like first to fifth grade. So like, what am I really not like writing the great American novel here, but that's how I started the practice. So it came from, I think, wanting to connect with people. And that is really at the core of what I do is I want to connect with myself. I want to connect with my subject. When I'm editing, I want to connect with the piece. I want to connect with the writer. When I'm working and I'm emailing, that's still a form of writing to me and I want to connect with the recipient. So I think it really all comes down from this like dire need to feel a oneness with myself and then a connection with the outside world.
That's deep. A oneness with myself, that's deep.
It's really interesting because from your, I guess, the motivation of you wanting to write and doing that, your work is very, I feel like the best way I can describe it is like, it's authentic, but it feels like everything you write is very personal to you. So when I'm reading your work, I feel invested in it because I feel the passion that comes through the webpage because it's not paper, but it's web. I feel that. So it's really interesting you talk about Outlook and how personal and wanting to connect because that comes across to me as a reader.
I appreciate that. Work. I appreciate that very much.
It's fascinating. Really, really fascinating. I've never heard, we've had people on the show before who've written, never heard them describe it like that. It's absolutely fascinating. Speaking of kind of going backwards and thinking about, you know, from first grade, with all the hindsight that you have, and we all are students, never teachers, what would you tell your younger self if you had the chance?
I don't think I would tell myself to do anything differently. But I would try and calm myself down. I used to have this big problem where people would make fun of me for carrying around big notebooks and often try to steal them and then read them out loud. So I would just tell myself, it's okay. It's okay that guy during lunch took your notebook and started reading it to the lunchroom. First of all, no one was listening to him. Second of all, people now read your writing all the time on your terms. So it's fine. You're going to get where you want to go.
Shout out to a younger Donna, I say. I want to ask you a couple of music-related questions. So I'm a massive fan of Sky Zoo, the MC. And the reason why is because when I hear him rap, I think to myself that his writing is so detailed, it's layered, it's dense, and I think he'd be a good writer. I think he could write a book, write some kind of movie. I think the same thing of Biggie. I think Biggie could have written scripts. Who are some of the MCs that you listen to or you hear and you think, you know what? They're actually good writers outside of music.
Ooh, good question. I'm very taken by imagery. So I think keeping it contemporary, because I think it's very easy to point back to like Big L and be like, Big L, one of my favorite rappers, and like Big L can do anything kind of a thing, right? But contemporary, I was just listening to the Juice WRLD Posthumous release before we got on this call. And he has so many just like blips of imagery that I'm like, this is like high level prose right now. And, you know, like I was doing an interview with a different outlet and we were talking about Posthumous releases. And I said something to the tune of like, man, what did we lose? And that's how I feel when I listen to Juice WRLD. And then obviously I'm the Mac Miller girl. I have a 3-foot poster of him behind me, which you can't see, but it is there. And he looks over my shoulder as I do my daily tasks. And I think that he is a spectacular writer. I think he is a musician's musician, a writer's writer. And I think that his discography is really a manual on how to survive. So definitely Mac, definitely Juice. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Latasha, but she is an MC and she is a real writer's writer. Like she can go at it. Lakaylee 47, she can go at it. Like real writer's writers. It's tough. It's tough because like, I don't necessarily think that just because you're a really good MC that you should then also write in other ways. Not because you're not qualified, but because I think that they're all such different skills. Like for a long time, I tried to write fiction, and I've written a lot of pages, so many pages. And it just doesn't happen for me in the same way that creative nonfiction does. And it's strange, right? Because it's all the same words. We all have the same toolbox. Like, you know, Skyzoo, great example. He has the same toolbox that I do. So there's really no telling if Skyzoo could write a better article than me.
Mm.
But I know for a fact that I could not write a better rap than Skyzoo. Let's put that
you
out
might,
there.
You might have some bars in them notebooks, Donna. I don't know.
I think Donna's a silent assassin. I think she's in it.
Listen, Donna's got bars, man.
No, I think Donna's like KRS. I think she got diss tracks for the whole Billboard top 10, just waiting in the clip. That's what I think.
Oh my goodness, no. My notebook is like, today will be a good day. Yesterday was an okay
Wait,
day.
Hey, that was a rap too. That was a rap too, Ice Cube. Come on now.
I walked into that. I definitely walked into that one. But no, I think in the end, we all have the same toolbox, but we're all different craftsmen. And so, like, example, if I had an electrician come to my house, but like I needed my stairs repaired, I don't think he would be able to repair my stairs, but he's still a capable craftsman.
You see the wordplay? You hear the wordplay? You see it there? That's Donna's an MC, man.
She's an MC, I'm telling you.
We should sign Donna.
Yeah. Definitely.
MC Chessman.
I'll think about it. I'll heavily consider it.
Go through those notebooks like Ice Cube.
Listen, we got Audio Mac. We got the streaming service. Let's do it.
I will heavily consider it.
Before I hand over to Summit, though, I just want to talk about Mac Miller for a moment. I know you're a big fan, and you did the Year of Mac. And what really stood out to me about those pieces you wrote, it was almost like you took on the responsibility of processing the grief for all his fans, because even though I wasn't the biggest fan, I didn't know how to really express what I was feeling or, you know, make some sense of it. But I found sense in some of those pieces you wrote. Like, what was your motivation for it? And was that intentional to really put grief, if possible, into some kind of perspective?
I think what's exciting about the Year of Mac series is that there was almost no intentionality behind any of it. And it was all instinct. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew I had to do it. And I didn't really understand the impact that it would have. And I still get emails to this day from fans that are thankful for the series. And I think that's what made it so pure, was there was no plan. There was no week-to-week plan. There was no calendar for it. There was nothing. The most planning that I did for it was when I'd have myself or Z reach out to one of our contacts for an interview. But other than that, I was really just like, what's in my heart? I'm going to write it. And I would write like four or five at a time. And then we would release them. But there was no forethought of like, this is going to be the process of grief. This is going to be this. This is going to be that. This week's piece is going to be this, because next week's piece is... It was just gut. And I think maybe that's why it resonated, because I was just feeling honestly through that. And I think when you are honest in your emotions, other people relate to that in some way.
No, awesome job with the Year of Mac, and rest in peace, Mac Miller, every time.
How do you balance freelance life with actual life, especially with the craziness that's been happening over the past year?
I don't think I do. I'll be honest. I wake up at 6. I work until 5. Then I'll eat. My fiance, she's wonderful. She'll cook us a meal. She is the best. She probably can hear me right now. I love you. though I have headphones on, so I can't hear her. But hopefully she said she loves me too. Be really weird if she didn't. And I go to bed at 8, man. Like, I have 2.5 hours to myself every day. I don't know if I spend them well. I don't think I have good work-life balance. I think it's better than it used to be, which is probably alarming for you to hear, because what I just described sounds awful. But I'm not unhappy. And I think that's important. I think everyone's work-life balance has to be to this like ultimate point of contentment. And I love waking up at 6. And I'm tired, so I love going to sleep at 8. And then the weekends are mine. I don't work on the weekends unless I absolutely have to. I do a lot of reading. I read anywhere from 50 to 100 books a year. Last year I hit 100. This year I'm on track for 50. We'll see what happens. There's a long year ahead. I play my Nintendo Switch.
Come on.
I watch horrible garbage television because I don't think my mind can process like highbrow media. On the weekends, I'm just so tired.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really common when you work a lot to just want to unplug. Mm. But I'll tell you what, though. If you want to get something out of like watching a show like Married at First Sight, which what an incredible garbage fire of a premise.
I like that show still. I'm not going to lie. You wouldn't think so if you know me, but that show is hard.
Yeah, right. But what I like to do with my fiance is we'll pause it and start psychoanalyzing the couples, and we'll end up branching off into these really engaging conversations about all these other topics. So that's how I get my mental stimulation on the weekends. And we play board games. I love board games. I love like problem solving in that way. And sometimes we just kind of sit next to each other on the couch with the cats, and then like 2 hours will go by and I'm like, this was great. Like no one emailed me, so I'm happy.
Sometimes that's what's needed. Honestly, sometimes just sitting there with loved ones, and that's it. That's all you need sometimes. Nothing else. You don't need anything else but that. Final question, because I know I'm conscious of time. The brand of DJ Booth, and obviously now AudioMac, I know the answer to this, but I'd like to hear it from you. What do you think is the contributing factor, especially from an editorial point of view, a contributing factor to its ongoing success?
We give a fuck. We really care. Can I say that?
Is yes,
that
okay? You can. Ask. The, okay, Summit great. Is the potty mouth of the South. You can swear as much as you like.
Listen, Donna, I swear all the fucking damn day. Every third word is a swear word.
You see what
I've got
I mean?
A child. It doesn't matter. I still
Listen
swear.
Him. Listen to him.
Fuck this shit.
Listen to
sorry,
him.
Sorry, Karen, Donna.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, we give a fuck. We really do. Like, I care when I sit down with an artist interview. Like, I care. I want, like, I'll prepare. I really will listen to your whole catalog and read all your past interviews and, like, ask you questions that matter. And I won't ask you about who you're dating because that's weird. And how does that help anyone? And that's why AudioMac World is so awesome, because we're giving you the world around the music. And that's why DJ Booth was such a success, because we really cared. And that's why personal essays that we publish don't suck, because, like, I know that when Z was editing them, he cared about like my well-being as he was editing those essays. And some of my essays like from the past before I, you know, got things handled with myself were pretty dark. And every time he would reach out to me and we would have like a serious conversation that had nothing to do with editing, but just like showed me that like as a human being, person to person, he cares. And I care about my writers and I care about their pieces and I care to edit them well. And I care about my coworkers and I care about my readers. And I think that that's what it all stems down to, is you can tell when something is on feeling, and we feel a lot. Maybe I feel more than I'm supposed to. Jury's still out, but I do feel a lot all the time. And I think I use it in a positive way.
Donna, this has been great. I'm not going to lie. This has been
inspiring.
Really insightful. And the reason why we like interviewing people we respect is we always get something from their perspective and we learn something new. And it feels like everything you do is from a place of absolutely giving a fuck, but it's personal to you, care. And one thing that me and Chris have in common is this care for the culture, the way of life. That's why we speak to varying different people. We don't just speak to rappers. We speak to managers, A&Rs, writers, managers, producers, the whole nine. So I just want to thank you for lending us your time, your wisdom, and for your contributions to the culture and to the art form, because writing and everything and editorial is something like, I was on a Clubhouse room yesterday and they were talking about, why can't we connect with the younger audience anymore as old heads? I was like, listen, there's some gaps in our ecosystem. And one of those gaps is people writing in the same way we used to find back when hip-hop was thriving on top of the world in the 90s, with magazines and different platforms and different voices, and we need those diversity of voices, and you certainly bring that. So thank you so much. You have no idea what this means to us, because this is speaking to people like yourself. It means a lot because we get to learn from you too.
Oh, that's really sweet. I often, when I'm writing, forget that people read it and that it matters to people. So it's just so nice to hear that you have such a reverence for writing in general, and that you care that I care.
Before you go though, Donna, you mentioned Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
Do you play Mario Kart?
Yes, badly.
Okay, I was going to challenge you, but if you're bad at it, I don't know if I can do that to you. You know what I mean?
No, I think she meant she was better than you. Basically.
Nah, this is I'm the Lord of Mario Kart, Donna.
Why do you want the smoke all the time? Why are you always looking for smoke? Leave Donna alone. She don't need the smoke.
Listen, I'm just being social, man. Come on now.
To be fair, I've heard this a lot about him, Donna, about how he's so great, quote, great on Mario Kart. I don't know, man. I might have to pull up my Switch and just like put some hours in and then just bust a move on him. I don't know, Donna.
We'll play some Mario Kart one day, Donna.
Yeah, I pull a consistent ninth place as Waluigi, so definitely a competitor.
Oh, man. You mentioned board games as well. Considering you're a writer, and this will be my last question, are you mean at Scrabble?
You know what? No, and I'll tell you why. I have a buddy. I refer to him as my brother. His name is Tyler, and his family is so good at Scrabble. And every time we play, I go into it, and I'm like, I'm a writer. I'm good at words. No, not good at Scrabble. Whole different ballgame.
It's same with me. As an MC, I play my wife at Scrabble. I'm an MC, you know, Donna. I should beat her. I've been with her for 9 years, and I've never won.
I'm a failed Homo sapien, and I can't play Scrabble for shit.
Yeah, Scrabble is a different beast. Like, you have to have a mind for Scrabble. Like, Scrabble doesn't care if you are good at writing, if you're an MC, if you know things about other things. Like, Scrabble doesn't care if you're a neurosurgeon. Scrabble is mean.
Yeah, it don't respect you. It doesn't respect you.
It doesn't discriminate. It eliminates all. Yeah. That's what it does.
But when people start pulling out foreign words in Scrabble, you know you got them on the ropes still.
I've never had anyone on the ropes, I'll be honest. I don't think I've had anyone in any capacity in Scrabble. They pull things out on me and I'm like, this is unreal. Like, what is the strategy? I just know words.
Some sorcery.
Absolutely.
We'll play Scrabble one day in the post-pandemic world.
Yeah, there's an online game, so you could play and we can all have, like, it's an app and we can all be on the, and we can all make our moves.
We should do that one day. Let's do it.
I agree.
We should do it.
I'm there.
Thank you, Donna. We really appreciate you. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. You're the best.
A big thanks to Donna for her time and her wisdom. Man, listen, I think a lot of our interviews, people seem to love our producer interviews, but people also love the interviews we do with writers.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the kind of going behind the curtain thing.
That's understanding the process.
And it's not something that gets highlighted enough. So that was food for thought.
It made me reflect though, as a musician and an artist, one of the challenges that we have is how do we produce quality music in an era where songs now have to be under 3 minutes and the third verse is now dead? Like, how do you keep these people's attention? So shout out to the writers who can write long form pieces and keep people's attention, and not just keep their attention, but like inspire them to action. I think that's dope. So shout out to Donna Chessman and people of her ilk.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Ilk and that.
You said you had questions for me.
Yes, I do. I want to know what's going on with your shirt today, bro. So
what do you mean?
For the benefit of our listeners, right? Summit's out here wearing like a blue dad shirt, bruv.
Yeah, man, I'm a dad, isn't it?
No. But listen, like you look like you work in a bank, bro. I ain't gonna lie, bruv. It's short sleeves as well, bruv. You know it's February, innit? Why are you wearing short sleeve shirt, bruv?
It's hot.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Did you iron the shirt?
No.
Well, you ain't got no spray starch.
What the hell? No, man.
Nah, you man are savages, bruv. You don't iron your shirt.
Just whacked it on, bro.
Nah.
No, I do. I just didn't iron this one.
You were raised with the wolves.
No, I iron my shirt, just not on this particular occasion.
You know what was funny though? Because normally, right, when you hop on, you got your Liverpool shirt on, you know, looking the part, you know what I mean? But because you logged on the Zoom and I didn't see you and then you just bowl into the room with the dad shirt, I said, oh man. I said, what's going on, man?
I I had some important meetings today, you know what I mean? Okay. You know, securing the bag and all okay. that good stuff.
All right, so man got dressed up for Zoom. You don't get dressed up for me, but safe, innit?
Yes, listen. When you secure the bag, innit?
Your shirt's hard, bruv. You look like you just came out of Cannon Street, bruv.
I'm just saying, like, when your
Northern Line shirt.
Yeah, when you my Northern Line shirt. For the benefit of the listeners who don't live in London and not in the UK, Northern Line is a tube line, a subway line, which connects Northwest London all the way through to Trafalgar Square, Central London.
Talking about the Northern South Line, London. Yeah. Talking about the Northern Line, there was a guy I knew who ironically was a friend of Gappy Ranks, and he was freestyling outside on the street one time, and he said a line I'll never forget. It. He said, "My spliff is bigger than the Hammersmith and City line."
Wow,
bro! Do you know how long that line is? Listeners, go online, look at the tube, and look at the Hammersmith and City line. This man said his spliff was longer than that. I'll wait for your response.
Listen, one thing we should talk about very briefly is how Donna is a secret MC who's got bars for the top 10 of Billboard. Bro, now, not that she said that, we're just putting words in her mouth.
Nah, she's got bars for all them people that tried to take her books, bro.
You remember when
Ice Cube did America's Most Wanted? He turned up at the studio, he had a bag of notebooks. Donna's got a bag of notebooks. Pure bars, still. Bruv. I don't want no bruv. Smoke with Donna.
I don't want to get on Donna's back. Imagine, she would.
Can you imagine going at a writer? Bruv, they got 1,000 words to come at you with, bruv. The clapback would be epic, bro.
1,000 swords to pierce you with, innit?
Fam. Nah, I don't want it.
I'll leave it alone. Okay. But no, appreciate Donna. Really enjoyed this episode, and I'm sure you will too. But you can follow us on social at Break the Atoms, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Chris's personal is at I Am Kinetic. Mine is at Hip Hop Chronicle. Also goes for Clubhouse.
Chatty House.
Yes, for the both of us. Clubhouse. And yes, thank you to all the listeners who continue to rock with us.
We got some new listeners as well, bro. We got some new listeners. Shout out to Czech Republic, Denmark, Norway, a bunch of European companies. Like, and when I say new listeners, we charted in those countries recently. I just wanted you to know that.
Yeah, I know. I also had a look, and big up to the people in Mexico, Cuba, Slovakia, Taiwan.
Come on.
Japan.
No Jamaica, no India.
Well, we've got Brazil.
That's not the same, innit?
We have India. We do have India.
Do we?
Yeah, so we have listeners in India. Sorry?
My people let us down.
Your people let us down. We have listeners in India. I looked at the stats. We have listeners in India.
That's hard.
And Bulgaria, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Scotland, Ireland, England, Germany, Italy, Spain.
I would hope we have some in England, considering we're here, innit? Imagine you didn't have listeners in your home country, bruv.
Listen, some artists can't even sell in their own country but can sell elsewhere. That's what I'm saying.
Good point. But, no. The ecosystem of hip-hop, man.
Yeah, my point is shout out to the listeners. We appreciate you. We love you. And more than anything, I love the fact that you still rock with us, given that we are both such destructive people and we hate each other.
Yeah. It's not a safe space. I'm going to double down. This podcast is not a safe space.
But you've got to qualify for who? For you.
Oh, no, listen, mate. Bro, this world ain't safe for me, bruv. And we don't need to go no further. This world is not a safe place, bro. This world is not a safe place, bro. The other day, right? You know when it was snowing, innit? I went for a walk, innit? Bruv, why did I see two men sparring in the middle of the road, bruv, in the snow? It's not safe.
Wow.
Busta Rhymes said it ain't safe no more. It's not safe, bruv.
You've got to take care of yourselves. None of that, man. None of that. We've got to take care of ourselves and our families.
Take care of your dad's shirt, bruv. Go put some spray starch on it. And make them sleeves crispy, you get me? Nah, your shirt's hard. Your shirt's hard. Some TM Lewin.
It is hard. I know it's hard.
Is it TM Lewin ting?
No. That's not a TM Lewin ting.
Okay. All right, I'm done.
And with that, we'll be back next week. Appreciate you. Love you. Peace and love.
Peace.